Welcome to the Umpiring Fast Pitch Softball Podcast. I'm David.
And I'm Pete. And in this episode, we're going to go over some more NFHS Softball Weekly rule interpretations. We've got three of them here from April 15th, 22nd, and 29th here in 2026. And we're going to do another one of our popular Stump the Chump episodes. So the question is, David, are you going to be the chump again?
Yeah, I'll be the chump this time again.
Good, because then you look bad and I look smart. I like it. All right, here we go. We'll just get right into this bad boy.
All right, here we go.
It also notes here that due to some restructuring of the rule book between 25 and 26, some of the rule references have been updated. So please note that any rule references I make are going to reference the 26 book, not the 25 book. So if you go digging around looking for what I say and you're like, it doesn't say that, Pete, you're wrong. I'm right.
Yeah, that's right. Make sure you're looking in the right book. It was confusing this year. I was disappointed that they changed them because so many things. It's like, oh, rule 8, this, that, and the other, 8.3 dot whatever. And it's like, no, it's 8.2.f now. It's not 8.3.f or whatever, you know, flip it.
Yep.
You know, type thing, right?
Yep. Okay. So here we go. We got situation one. F3, who is number 11, is batting third in the lineup. They bat and reach first safely. Team A's coach asks for time and enters number 12 to run for number 11. Okay. So now we got two scenarios. In situation A, 11 has a legal reentry as this was the first time they left the game when 12 entered and ran for them. In B, 11 does not have a legal reentry as this was the second time they left the game when 12 entered and ran for them.
Okay.
In both cases, without being reported in the bottom of the inning, 11 catches a throw at first base to retire Team B's first batter of the inning. In both cases, Team B's coach approaches the umpire, claiming this is an illegal substitute, and the player is restricted to the bench or dugout for the remainder of the game, and they get the option to take the play or nullify the out, and B1 gets the bat again with the same count. The umpire agrees. So in ruling A...
Okay.
So is this the correct ruling in a situation where 11 still had a legal reentry?
Yeah, so I think it's correct if she had a reentry, but we're not done. We still have a warning to be issued for a lineup card infraction, unreported sub.
Okay. Which he did. Yeah, they did not include that. They just had the player restricted, but they did not give the warning. All right. I was just saying what the umpire did, not what the ruling says. Okay. So what about B, where 11 is not even allowed back in the game and now they're back in the game?
Yeah, so now we have the difference between an unreported and an illegal player. So I think, anyway, this is here comes the chump part. So I think we have an illegal player now, and so now we have a restriction to the bench, probably for the coach, because the player's already out of the game, right? So we're probably restricting the coach to the bench for playing an illegal player. Oh boy, I'm in trouble with this one. I can look at Pete's face. I can see Pete's face.
No,
I'm like,
no.
Nope, you got it wrong.
I'm trying to follow along because the two scenarios, as you're going, I'm jumping back and forth between the correct answers. So in A, 11 does have that legal reentry, so they are not an illegal player, as you said, as they have eligibility to reenter the game. In this case, they're just an unreported substitute, which you said. The penalty for this is a team warning for the first offense, and the next offender and head coach are restricted to the dugout or bench area for the remainder of the game. In B, since 11 does not have eligibility, they are an illegal substitute, which is what you said. In this case, 11 would be restricted to the bench or dugout. Offensive team also has the option of taking the play or the penalty and would allow B1 to bat again with the same count. So there you go. You got it right.
Except I have the coach restricted to the bench on an illegal player. And I think you just read that it said the player is restricted to the bench. It's like, well, the player was already restricted to the bench. So I'm pretty sure I'm hitting the coach too. But he or she might get mad at me for doing that. But yeah, you put an illegal player on the field, I think I'm putting you on the bench. Right.
Situation two. In the third inning, it is observed that the coach in the dugout is asking the catcher where a pitch missed the strike zone through electronic one-way communication. And then F2 is then pointing and saying outside towards the dugout. After a few observances of this process, the umpire rules this a violation of the electronic communication rule as the coach and the catcher are having a two-way communication and they eject the catcher. So the person, let's pretend they got a smartwatch on their wrist or something, right? And the message is coming in from the dugout to the catcher, where'd that miss? And the catcher just looks at their watch or the device, points to the right and goes outside. And then because this is now in communication coming in, communication coming out, of some sort, the person saying, two-way communication, catcher, you're out of here. The whole court's out of order. Everything's terrible.
I sure hope I get this one right because I'm laughing because this one's pretty ridiculous. So one-way communication rule is about one-way electronic communication so that the coach can send something to the catcher through the thing. You have absolutely no control and no rule about whether a catcher can communicate either with their body or their mouth back to the coach. But if it was electronic, I think if she were looking at her smartwatch and hitting 1 through 9, you know, for where the location of the pitch was, now we might have a problem. But the one-way communication is the one-way electronic communication. And so I believe the ruling here was incorrect, that there was nothing illegal.
Right. The rule allows one-way electronic communication from the coach to the dugout while the catcher's on defense. It does not restrict the catcher from answering the coach with verbal comments or gestures. The only restriction is the catcher cannot answer via electronic communication.
There you go.
So, hey, was that pitch outside, pointing outside? No differently than if the coach had yelled it in. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. And then differently. So here's the other one too, where it's like she looks down and she sees changeup, and the catcher turns and looks at the coach and says, "No, this girl hit a home run on the changeup last inning, dummy."
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sending that pitch to her.
Yep. And so they just reiterate again, restrictions are not on two-way communication itself, but on two-way electronic communication.
Yeah, exactly.
So as long as the catcher doesn't reply via electronic means, they have not violated the rule, as you said, hitting 1 to 9 on a zone chart. In the fifth inning, F2 requests time to confer with the pitcher. The umpire signals and verbalizes time, allowing the players to confer. Later in the same half inning, F6 requests time to calm the F1 down, and umpire denies this request, stating the team has already used their one player-to-player conference allowed that half inning.
Wow, you couldn't see me shake my head. Like, as soon as you said it, I went, what? Nope, that's not a thing. So NFHS certainly doesn't have any limitation on player-to-player conferences in the rule book, but certainly as part of game management, you know, you might, depending on what's going on, she's calming her down, you know, whatever. It's like, well, make it quick, or, you know, something like that. Like, hey, we're playing here, let's go, type of thing. But if they get excessive, but hey, if she's upset, you know, if the pitcher's upset and F6 thinks that she needs to go calm her down, I want the pitcher to be calm. I want strikes thrown. So.
Right. Yeah. And so the answer here from the NFHS is incorrect statement by the umpire. NFHS softball does not have a limit on player-to-player conferences allowed in a half inning or the game. These types of conferences are controlled by the umpires as part of game management, as you said. If the umpire feels it's excessive, they have the right to deny a timeout. So we always have the right to deny a timeout for a thing like that. We could say, no, you can't have time. Like if a batter's at bat and they want time and the pitcher's imminently ready to deliver, we don't have to give them time, right? Sometimes people do assume that time must be granted. It must be asked for and granted. Same with the catcher asking for it or the shortstop. If we feel like this is excessive, people are messing around, we may just be like, play the ball, let's go. But in reality, a lot of times umpires, and this is a quote, umpires should allow teams a reasonable amount of time to have discussions, including a reasonable number of player-to-player conversations. But as part of the responsibilities to manage the game, not allowing excessive stoppages of play or excessive time.
Yeah, I like it. And I would say, you know, to our umpire friends out there listening too, another one that you want to really take a look at, and in college, they've really fixed this with the pitch clock and, you know, getting in the box and being ready and that kind of thing. But here in high school, you know, you see somebody trying to mess with the pitcher, you know, the pitcher's taking a little bit too long to get the call in and the batter's call time, you know, to step out and that kind of stuff, and really take a look at that. And if it's getting, I don't know, too much, if it's just getting to be too much for you. You are well within your right to say, nope, stay in the box. Nope, stay in the box. You know, when she's going time. And I've seen this happen a lot too, because kids believe that when they ask for it, they get it. Right. So they'll call time and step out of the box. And so if you see them do that the first time, kind of tell them, wait on me to issue time before you step out of the box, because I might not always do that. Right. And then if it did get bad and you're doing it again, you're well within your right to say, no, stay in the box. You know, they go, time blue, and you go, nope, stay in the box, and just get ready to hit, because that's game management still, right? So I gotta play these little games. And now, since I'm up on a soapbox about that, I will tell all of my college players listening, and if there are any college coaches listening, I would also say this: use that clock. If you're stand as a batter, you're in the box, right? You had, I think it's 12 seconds now in 2026 to get into the box, and you're in the box. The pitcher now still has only 8 seconds to start the pitch. It has to be done in 20 seconds, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so if she's standing there for 6 seconds and you're like, oh, in my past, I used to mess with her. She's obviously upset in her head. She doesn't like the pitch call coming in. I'm going to call time and make her think about it. Well, if you wait 2 more seconds and she hadn't started that pitch yet, you're going to get a ball. So don't go messing with the pitch head. Use the clock. to your advantage. If the pitcher is being slow, she's about to get called.
Yeah.
So take the ball. That's just my unsolicited advice on, hey, there's rules out there to speed the game and make the pitchers go. But as a batter, you can take advantage of those rules too.
There you go. Let them know. Okay. Situation one from the second, from the 22nd, April 22nd.
Oh, we have to keep going. How'd I do on the first one? Did I get them all?
You went 3 for 3.
Yes.
So team A has batters that either A, have helmets with the no face protector, or B, helmets that have no face protector, but is certified by SEI to meet the NOCSA standard. But they do have a device attached to the helmet that has an area that extends from the helmet and protects the jaw of the batter on the side facing the pitcher.
So kind of what you see sometimes in baseball,
those, yeah,
where it just sticks out like a jawbone protector there. The umpire rules that these helmets are not legal for use in NFHS softball and has them removed from the game and issues a team warning for utilizing illegal equipment. What's the ruling?
And so this is an equipment one. If there's a part of the rule book I don't know very well, it's got to be this one. But I think just my experience is going to say in high school, they have to have face masks. I know in college they don't. And a lot of times the players will take them off. And I, as a college coach, I was like, that's ignorant. Have you ever seen somebody get hit, off of the batted ball that comes and gets them? And so I'm going to go with those are illegal helmets in both cases for fast pitch softball in high school. So I think those were correct in both cases.
Yep. The ruling is correct in both cases. All fast pitch batting helmets must be equipped with a face protector that is certified by SEI to meet NOCSA standards. The face protectors are designed to provide full face protection for the batter, and it must also have the phrase meets NOCSA standard at the time of manufacture permanently affixed to the face protector. So, correct. All right, next one. In a state that requires the use of a double first base, B1 hits a ground ball to F6.
Yep.
They run to first, contacting the colored portion of the base prior to F3 receiving the ball. They overrun first base and return to the colored portion of double first base. F3 then tags the runner as they are standing only on the colored portion, and the umpire rules them out, stating they must return to the white portion of the base.
Ah. Well, thankfully, we just did an entire episode on double first base. And my good buddy, Pete, who does all of the editing of our podcast, had his hands full with fixing all of my errors in that episode. So I learned my lesson. And I know that in high school, that is incorrect. She can return to either the orange bag or the white bag. And that is even if she had rounded, she could do that as well.
Yep. Ruling. Incorrect ruling, but Pete note, correct ruling by David. David answered correctly. The rule allows the offense and defense to touch the white or colored portion of the base on a fair ball hit to the outfield with no play being attempted when the runner is returning to first, or when the runner is returning to first, on a fly ball tag up, on an attempted pickoff play, or on a base on balls. So there you go.
Awesome.
And again, listen to the episode. It's gone over extensively. Rules are read, reiterated. So there you go. Situation three. In the fifth inning, Team A has a substantial lead, and their coach approaches the umpire and says, Blue, I want to enter 11 for 1, 12 for 2, 13 for 3. And then in B says, Blue, I want 11 to bat for 1, but 1 will re-enter when we go on defense. In both cases, the umpire says they can accept 11 for 1, but the remaining changes are projected substitutions and cannot be accepted at that time and must be made when the player is actually entering the game.
Oh, I like this one. So this one, I think we might have talked about this too, not this year, but it might have been last year. Like, what is a projected substitute? And so and I think it was A, you said he had 3 substitutes he wants to make. They're not projected, even though they're batting and it's not their turn at bat yet. If he comes in and says 11 for 1, 12 for 2, and 13 for 3, you make those changes. You're like, yep, there they are. And here, look, on my scorecard, look, I've scratched 11. She has 1 re-entry coach. I scratched 12. She's used her re-entry, so she's done for the day. I scratched 13, whatever, right? And these new players are playing. So now if they did that, if he did 4 of them and they went out, and only 3
that
of them
fourth
got
one
be
better
there,
go play defense.
Yeah, that fourth one better go play defense, right? Because she's in the game. So you can write all of those down. The projected substitute, though, I think was in B of your scenario, and the projection was she'll re-enter later. It's like, yeah. If she does, you better come tell me, so I think from as an umpire, as game management and making sure that coaches don't mess up, I would accept the change, 13 for 1 or whatever it was, 1 for 13, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But coach, if you're going to put her back in, you need to come tell me. I'm not allowed to accept that change for a future substitute. So we call those projected substitutes in the book. And it's something that you want to do later, not now. That's not how it works. You have to tell me what you want to do now. And if you want to do something else later, you got to tell me then.
Yep, that's exactly right. So in A, when he wants to do just mass substitutions all at once, that's allowed. And that is going to have the umpire literally changing their scorecard all the same time. They'll line up all at the same time. And then in B, where they want you to make a change now, and then without the coach coming and talking to you again, remember that when the next inning starts that you're going to make some change without a coach around. That's projected. That's not cool. David is correct. That,
yeah. Well, not to mention the fact that lightning struck in between what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to wait 30 minutes. And then there was another lightning in 25 minutes. And the teams decided that it's going to be dark. So we're going to continue this game next week. And so here's my lineup card, coach. I'm probably not available for your umpire next week. You know, make sure that the umpire gets this. And how does we know about this projected sub? We don't know. We don't have any idea.
Right. Exactly right. Okay. On to the April 29th rules or interpretations.
Oh, man, this is getting a long episode. I'm starting to sweat.
Oh, you got it. Okay? It's going to be good. Here we go. R1 is on third. B2 is up to bat. They're right-handed. They take a pitch that's called a ball. In scenario A, the batter remains stationary in the box. And in situation B, the batter moves partially towards third with 1 foot out of the box to get a signal from the coach. I think we can all kind of picture they just open up their stance, step in the bucket, kind of. In both cases, R1 is only one step from third on their way to returning to third when F2 throws towards third, contacting B2. So they hit the batter with the throw. The defensive coach insists this is interference and B2 should be ruled out.
Okay.
So step one, in situation one, batter didn't move a muscle. In situation two, they just kind of opened their stance to look at the coach. Throw goes to third in both cases, hits the batter. What happens?
All right, boy, we're going to get crazy on this one. Not too much, though. So where she stood still, she is absolutely not in trouble. The batter is allowed to be in the box and not move. She cannot move. She can be in the box and move. She can be in the box and dance. And if she does that and interferes, then she's guilty of interference. But if she is standing statue still, then it's not even statue still. If she's standing still, then she's not guilty of interference. So a lot of people think that she owns the box, and as long as she moved and was staying in the box, that's fine. That is false. If she moved, then she could be guilty of interference. However,
intentional or unintentional, doesn't matter.
That's right.
1 foot. It wasn't like she moved around. She did keep 1 foot in the box still, but 1 foot out. But even if she kept both feet in the box and just like spun around in the box,
right?
Doesn't matter.
That's not spinning around in the box. Haven. That's right. That spinning around in the box could have put her bat in the way of the throw, you know, all of that stuff. The fact that the runner was one step off of third base is irrelevant, I think, to the entire situation. Doesn't make any difference at all. However, the one thing I would watch, because I've seen this on social media, some coaches, at least two, because I've seen two different teams do it, some coaches have been teaching their catchers to, if there's a runner at third or somebody standing at second, just drill the batter. And so watch for that. And if you think it happened, I would get them in immediately.
Yeah.
I would get them immediately. And that whole one step off, one of the social media things that I saw, there was a runner at second. She wasn't even running to third. And the catcher stood up, and because the batter took a step back out of the box to, you know, look for the sign like you're talking about, but he just opened up to the third base coach and the girl drilled her right in the side of the ear hole, the catcher did. I'd have ejected her in a heartbeat. And then, you know.
Did you still call the batter out, though? You eject the catcher for what they did, but is the batter still out?
No, there was no play.
Okay.
Yeah, there was no play at all. So she was throwing the ball to third and there was no play at third.
Okay. So there we go.
Did I get it right?
No, that is right. You are correct. Here we go. In the third inning, Team A is batting with B3 due up to bat, but B4 enters the batter's box instead. 2-ball, 2-strike count. Team A's coach approaches the umpire, telling him that B3 should be the proper batter. So the team is fixing its own mistake. Okay?
Okay.
Not being called out by Team B. Team A just was like, oh, crap. And sends somebody else. The umpire does not allow it, saying only the defense can appeal batting out of order.
Oh, that's incorrect. No, that's incorrect. Yep. As soon as you figure out you send the wrong person, you can send the correct one and they assume the count and off we go. You're in big trouble. What you can't fix is after they reach base.
Yep.
You can't fix it then. Yep.
Yep.
You can't fix it if they're out, right? So after the plate appearance is complete, the only person that can appeal it is the defense. But that plate appearance wasn't complete, so the offensive team has an opportunity to fix their mistake.
Yep. So the ruling is incorrect ruling. The rule allows either team to correct the error while the batter's at bat, with the proper batter taking the position in the batter's box and assuming the ball strike count. Only the defense can appeal after an improper batter has completed the time. But during the bat, it can be corrected by either team. And so that's where if you're the defensive coach and you notice it,
don't say anything while they're in the box, because
right.
Yeah, because you can, the only thing that can happen for you is good. Either the batter gets out, whatever, cool. Or the batter gets on and you get to be like, hey, if you fix it in the box, they just get to send the right person up and there you go. Situation three, R1 is on third. And this is our last situation. R1 is on third. They take a big lead on the pitch and are already walking back slowly towards third base when the ball is returned to F1 in the circle. F1 walks to the back of the circle looking away from R1. R1 sees that F2 is not watching him anymore, stops short of third, and advances immediately towards home, where they're safe as F1 was late getting them the ball. The umpire rules this is a violation of the look-back rule and calls R1 out.
Ooh. So I think that the challenge here is the stop once idea. So
it's a little difficult because you're not watching a play. I just read your words, right?
Yeah. So the look-back rule says that any runner is allowed to stop one time after the ball is back in the circle if there's a batter runner that she's reached first base.
Mm-hmm.
They may stop one time and immediately make a decision about which direction to go. So it sounds like we had a leadoff of the third base runner, and before the catcher threw the ball back to the pitcher, she started toward third. So she's not stopped yet. The look back rule's not in play yet.
Yep.
She's still walking back to third when the look back rule becomes effective, right? So the pitcher now has the ball, so she's walking.
You got it
she
right.
notices that she's not looking, so mm-hmm. she stops one time, and then she has to decide to either advance or retreat. And it sounds like she did that. So I think the ruling was incorrect. I think that she was not in violation of the look back rule.
You are right. Incorrect ruling is described, and then everything you said is right. So 9 for 9 today. On to
yay! Awesome.
What do you win? A lifetime supply of life. There you go.
Lifetime supply of life. It'll run out as exactly when it does, right?
That is right. Okay. And then, as it is, that wraps up our episode.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
All right. Until next time.